sir. We promised you a great
gorgeous
main
event. Gorgeous George.
Ready, Blasty, the maker of China.
Andre, the China.
WrestleMania.
Do I have everybody's attention now?
Whiskey Rebellion Radio is a Pantless Aggression production.
The internet is a completely different culture, isn't it?
You said it. Everything here is immediately followed by sarcastic comments and nasty responses.
Yep. We're finally where we belong.
Well, I woke up Sunday morning with no way to hold my head. That didn't hurt. And the beer I had for breakfast wasn't bad, so I had one more for dessert.
Together again. Gee, it's good to be together again. I just can't imagine that you've ever been gone.
Hope you you're enjoying your bacon this morning, and if you're not enjoying bacon, you should get yourself some, because if you've been on the internet lately, bacon is awesome. Anyway, welcome back to the Sodom and Gomorrah Political Podcasts here on a Sunday morning, and since you're not at church, obviously you decided to spend some time with us, the rule breakers and the drug takers, and you know them, you love them, those bottom-bashing fornicators. It's Whiskey Rebellion Radio. I, of course, am one half of the hosts. Haha. I stopped myself this time. The Reddit Out Republican, the social media messiah, blogger without a cause, and not only a voice for the voiceless, but the heart and soul of YR's nationwide. Long Island's own John Brodigan, and doing it loud, doing it proud with me as he does each and every week. The something to my something and the something to my something. I'm sorry, I forgot to think up of analogies. But he's here, and we're happy he's here. Mark Radulich, what did you do?
All right, I can start this off two ways. I can either make fun of one of my friends on Facebook for being an idiot and link that to the book I'm going to review later, or I can talk about my daughter threw her diaper at my wife. You pick.
Well, since you're going to review the book later anyway, I say we talk about how your wife threw her diaper at your daughter. No.
Oh, it should only be that simple. So I've never been prouder as a father. And I'll tell you what, my daughter started off in this world just absolutely fantastic. The moment she was born, she pooped on my wife. But today, she topped it, you know, because she's done many other things since then, but nothing was quite as impactful as, yay, after 9 months, you're born, oh, you pooped. This is even better. But by the way, good morning, Sunday morning breakfast eaters. Today, my almost 18-month-old, and mind you, I'm going to predicate this whole thing on we've been debating whether or not it's too early to potty train. Well, today that decision was made for us as my daughter got up, took off her diaper, chucked it at my wife, and ran into the bathroom yelling huzzah.
You taught your daughter how to say huzzah.
I may have embellished, but she did take the diaper off and throw it at my wife and then proceed to fall into the toilet. And I tell John, I don't know about college graduations, doctoral degrees, the ability to drive. This may be the proudest moment I'm ever going to have as a father, and I just need to relish in it.
I mean, I'm trying to get a visual of what happened this morning. I mean, was your wife giving your daughter sass? Was there like a struggle? Or just, you know, we'll call her daughter X, walks into the room, sees your mother, her mother, ignoring her. God, if you threw the diaper at your mother, that would be a story. But saw her mother ignoring her and just decided, yeah, what the heck, took up the diaper and threw it at her.
No, I think it was done much in the same manner as quitting your job, dropping your pants, and walking out the door, middle fingers in the air, something you know a lot about, and how that evolved into throwing your pants at your boss and walking out in your underwear. I think she said, look, Mac, I'm tired of peeing and pooping on myself. Huzzah, here's my diaper. Do something. And then proceeded to run into the bathroom. That's my kid, yo.
You know, I remember that day that within like a week of when she was born, we had already decided she was she was part of the routine.
And part of the routine she is. Someday when you have an opportunity to meet my daughter again, you'll know that she's got a wicked sense of humor. She definitely inherited the Whiskey Rebellion sense of humor, if you know what I mean.
Oh no, I mean like I've said, that kid is all Radulich.
Yeah, I hope if we are blessed with another child that the next one is more like the mother, so that my wife doesn't just throw her hands up and said, "That's it, I'm not a mother, I'm a milk provider."
That would actually be funny if the girl took after the you, and then like the mother took after the
The boy took after the mother.
Yes.
You know, I like, as long as the boy doesn't turn out to be a complete fag with PH, you know, I said PH.
That's old school.
You know, then look, my wife is a good person. We would be blessed if my son turned out to even be the, you know, a fraction of the person my wife is.
Yeah.
And
more importantly, it would prove that your wife actually has, like, you know, DNA.
that's really what I'm driving at here, because right now we're still questioning whether or not there's any of my wife's DNA in my daughter.
So, speaking of throwing your diaper at someone, hey, how about that news?
There was some news this week, wasn't there?
You know, I'll let you, Obamacare or Fast and Furious, jump ball.
Well, you know, John, I know that the Obamacare legislation and it being upheld in the Supreme Court is a volatile issue, especially among conservatives. When it passed, I actually put up on Facebook and Twitter, I said, you know, we were going to be talking about this on the show. P.S., I'm actually for Obamacare. And then I put an ampersand. And much like Opus the Penguin from Bloom County, I had to add, please be tasteful. You know, and I know that people are afraid of this thing and they feel like it's the end of America as we know it. But I think you and I owe it to the people, hashtag, owe it to the people, to really break this thing down and talk about it from, you know, a middle-of-the-road point of view. I mean, if there's anything I think that you and I are good at is wiping away a lot of the, you know, histrionic bullshit that comes from both sides of both parties and really look at what this is and what this isn't. I say take the emotion out of it and let's be pragmatic. So, you know, I'm going to turn it back to you. You know, knowing that we live in a world where the government does do stuff. Look, you and I can pray all day long to live in the vast, great, libertarian, laissez-faire, you know, market-driven America. But that America died many years ago, and it ain't coming back, folks. Ron Paul, God bless you. You are never going to be president, sir. So, you know, given that, and the fact that neither one of us wants to live in Brazilian-level poverty, they're trying to get it so that we can deal realistically with people needing healthcare coverage of some kind. Given that, and that we're going to have to get to that place some way, how do you feel about this legislation? How close to the mark do you think it comes? Where do you think the deficit?
The legislation itself is crap. I mean, the concept of needing to reform the healthcare system, yeah, obviously, but what they came up with. It levies giant taxes on businesses. And actually, Virginia, as according to the Supreme Court today, it is in fact a tax.
Well, all right, it's caused
healthcare premiums to go up, and yet the stock market to go down. It's not it doesn't reform healthcare. It has the word health in a couple places. And it has the word Obama in a couple places, and that's about it.
Yeah. I don't want to see the other side, but part of it is what it essentially says is, as far as the tax part of it, if you don't have health care coverage, you either buy some or you can elect not to buy it, but then if you do, you have to pay a tax. You know, included in your income tax, you have to pay this extra tax that accommodates your potential use of healthcare services that you're not paying for. So, like, if you go to the emergency room or something like that, or you go to another, you know, or you take advantage of another quote-unquote free healthcare provider, because you chose not to have health insurance, you now pay into at least the government-provided part of it through a tax. You know, the other side of it is the healthcare exchange, essentially what it's attempting to do, and I get your point about, like, it doesn't reform healthcare. What it does is it's kind of it feels like a series of poorly built bridges.
You're more alive.
I think what they attempted to do was create an opportunity for niche markets providing healthcare for the poorest amongst us. So for people who make, you know, who are the working poor, quote unquote, there's an opportunity for healthcare providers to create niche plans for poor people. When you say, look, everyone's got to be covered, so here's this now giant opportunity to create plans in a market that didn't really exist before, because the only thing that really existed there was Medicaid. I know that it cuts Medicaid somewhat. I think there's also provisions it cuts Medicare, but there's provisions where it expands Medicaid. I know that it opens up the availability to Medicaid to more people, which is, you know, you can debate the pros and cons about that. But again, the end of the day, what they're trying to get to is, like, everyone's got to be covered or at least be paying into something, because this shit costs money. It does. Cost, you know, whether you go to the emergency room or you have, you know, Cadillac healthcare, it all costs money. It's all got to come from somewhere. And this was at least the first attempt at trying to address that. And I think what people tend to forget is you can say all day long, look, if you don't have money, you shouldn't have health. If you've made bad decisions in your life, if you're taking bath salts, you know, and eating people, eating their face, and you end up needing health care services, well, you don't deserve to be covered because you made bad decisions. That's fine. You're still going to have to pay for that guy's health care. Okay? Yeah. You're still going to have to pay for that guy's health care. So my way of looking at this is, well, all right, this at least takes us one step closer to people taking their own responsibility for their own health care. That guy probably isn't going to buy health care, so he'll have to pay for it, and, you know, out of his taxes. And, you know, you can just go around and around on that, but, you know, that's what I'm getting at.
Okay. Well, let's take a quick break there. Let's pay some bills, talk to the sponsors, and when we come back, the hardest working blogger in show business, Jimmy Buys, will be joining us to throw his 4 cents in. You're listening to Whiskey Rebellion Radio on the mighty FTR.
Here's one for the ladies. Rake me. Rake me, my friend. Come on, rake me. Rake me again. I'm not the only one.
This is Andrew Breitbart, and you're listening to FTR Radio.
Look at all the people. Billy, what's the matter?
I
Billy! My friend passed out. Help me get him up.
Never lift the head of a person who's fainted.
Airtight.
Keep him flat and raise his legs. Now loosen his clothes and use a wet cloth.
What happened?
You passed out. Remember, if someone faints,
never lift their head.
You got it.
Now we know.
And knowing's half the battle.
G.I. Joe!
Stay close, Tony, so you don't get lost.
Hey, look at that. I can do that. Hey, Mike! Where are you? Mike!
Hey, take it easy.
But I lost my brother and...
Stay calm. Think. Where did you see him last? Go back there. If he doesn't come back, ask a policeman for help.
Hey, it's Alpine and my scared brother.
It's not scary being lost if you don't lose your head. Now I know.
And knowing is half the battle.
G.I. Joe!
Killing in the name of... Some of those the workforces are the same that burn crosses. Some of those the workforces are the same that burn crosses. Killing in the name of.
Welcome back to Whiskey Rebellion Radio.
It's a giant horse's ass. You're watching Fox.
That never gets old. Joining us on the show now, very excited to have this gentleman because generally our taping schedules conflict, so it's very rare I get to kibitz about the politics with him. Hailing from Maryland, and like I said, the hardest working blogger in show business. And the motherfucking delivery. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Brian, what's shaking, man?
Not much. How are you today?
I am great. I am just, it's like I was a gazelle this morning standing out in a field of other gazelles, and then all of a sudden every gazelle in the herd just started running all in different directions, and I was just standing there trying to figure out what the heck was going on.
Speaking of analogies, because I don't have an actual segue, Jimmy, meet Mark. Mark, meet Jimmy.
Hi, Mark.
Hello.
So we were talking about, before we brought you on, we were talking a little bit about the healthcare bill and the decision. And I know a lot of people on our side are running around like the sky is falling and flailing their arms in the air and how Justice Roberts sold us out. You had an interesting quote on Twitter, simply, Roberts' decision is really smart. What do you mean, and what's your overall take on the news of the day?
You know, I the first thing I wanted to do when I saw the decision come down is I wanted to get the thing and read it for myself. I wanted to read what Roberts had to say. I wanted to read what Scalia had to say in dissent. I wanted to briefly scan over Ginsburg and chuckle. But Roberts, look, there are a couple different ways this could have gone. And I suspect that there is a lot more at work here than just a simple, here's the case, let's decide it. But that's the way the Supreme Court is. There are very few big decisions that come in front of the court that the court decides solely on the merits of the case in front of them. They're always dealing with some bigger, badder issue, and Roberts had two or three big, bad issues, and I think that he handled them about as well as he could.
Yeah, and especially he had one real money quote that a friend of mine was passing around the internet. Basically, he basically said how it's not the court's job to pass the laws; they just interpret the law, and those decisions are entrusted to our nation's elected leaders, who can be thrown out of office if the people disagree with them. Quote: "It is not our job to protect the people from the consequences of their political choices."
That's conservatism, if I've ever heard it.
At what point do you draw the conclusion that we were sold out when basically even in his opinion of agreeing with the bill that we disagree with, he basically said, listen, this is your fault. You voted for the guy.
Yeah, essentially what it comes down to is Roberts' decision to consider the mandate plus penalty as a tax. And if you read that section, it's pretty clear that he wasn't particularly eager to do it. It's also pretty clear that he thinks it's a fairly stupid thing to do. But it's also clear that he feels that it is a valid interpretation. Given the way that the Democrats and the administration, especially while they were trying to pass the bill, were running around they really did play the individual mandate like it was Schrodinger's cat. It's a tax. It's not a tax. It's a mandate and penalty. It's not a penalty. You won't know till you open it up and find out if it's a tax or a penalty. Well, Roberts opened the freaking box and said, congratulations, everybody. I'm going to settle this thing. It's a tax. Now deal with it.
Let me follow that up and ask you a question.
Yeah.
As a tactic going forward, I know Romney's now beating the drum of vote me and I'll repeal, which I think is about as believable as unicorns and Santa Claus. However, the tactic among the talk radio hosts and some of the pundits has been play up the fact that it's a tax increase, it's a tax increase. And I don't know how effective that's going to be to get anybody from the Republican side elected come November, and I would like to hear your thoughts on that.
I think it'll be a great tactic. The thing is, and I've been a repeal guy the whole time. This is something that the Republican Party should have been doing for 2 years, and they haven't. They've been lazy. They've been sitting back waiting for the Supreme Court to show up and be the
I think we lost Jimmy. We did lose Jimmy.
Let me, and so we get him back, John, let me quick piggyback on what he was saying, because Michael Medved was making a point that I think he was about to make. I happened to be listening to Randy Rose and the Michael Medved show so I could get both sides on my way home from work and this week. And one of the things Michael Medved was saying was, this is just dessert for the Republicans playing the liberals' game. You know, the liberals are said to be the ones who go to the courts to pass law that they can't get Congress to pass. And this time, that's the tack that the Republicans seem to have taken, which was take this thing to the Supreme Court, it'll get thrown out, as opposed to, as he was suggesting, get this thing repealed in Congress, you know, or stop it to begin with. You know, and it's funny, if you hate this law and hated it all along, there was an opportunity, you know, the Republicans threw everything but the kitchen sink, if you'll remember, to try to get this thing stopped. And I can't remember what Harry did, but he pulled some, like, congressional nefarious chicanery, you know, and he got this thing passed anyway. And it was like, wow, that should have been made a bigger deal out of. Because I think it was, like, legal but unethical or something like that, if you remember the details. Yeah, Harry Reid pulled off to get that thing passed.
Okay. And we got Jimmy back. Do you remember the point you were making, or should we move on to a different point?
Aliens. It was aliens, guys. It was aliens and Carl Rove at my phone. My point was that what you're looking at is about a $1.8 trillion tax increase that's likely to be a lot more because, and I think this isn't getting the attention it should, the whole Medicare exchange thing, the whole Medicare expansion thing is gone. It's gone. And it's not gone by a small margin either. It's gone by like 7-2. And that is likely to make Obamacare on the books a lot more expensive than it was when it passed.
Let me ask you this. Now, my father, who is a character on this show, is on a MoveOn.org council member, very liberal. He and I were talking, and his thing was he thinks Obamacare is a terrible law, but it was meant to be terrible. It's actually a Trojan horse. It's going to fail, and that'll pave the way for single payer, Medicare for everybody. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I think he's absolutely right. I think that's the way it was going to go. I think the president pretty much said as much, that really single payer is the ultimate destination. If you look at, 2,000, 2,700 pages, however long Obamacare ended up being, the idea that that unwieldy pile of papers was going to make our healthcare system more efficient, better for us, or less expensive is just kind of silly. So you got to figure, what are they after? I happen to think, and I hate this because it sounds like I'm being conspiratorial, but it's the kind of thing that, something, we're going to build a system that is going to look good on paper, but is going to fail so badly that people are going to beg us to scrap it. I mean, the Medicare expansion to the states is a primary example of how kind of things were built to go poorly.
Well, yeah, and the funny thing is, it's like, they're not like the fact that Mark's father admitted to it. Tom Daschle wrote a book where he flat out said the way to get the healthcare reform we want is to sneak it in without anyone noticing.
The thing is that what progressives want and what they wanted, this has been the holy grail since at least FDR, probably Hoover. The holy grail in American politics for progressive politicians has been universal, single-payer health care, British-style NHS health care. That's what the goal has been. And look, to their credit, they have worked toward it pretty steadily. I mean, Medicare is a step that way. Medicaid is a step. There is no way. If you look at Medicaid, some of my friends, Ben Domenech, pulled up a couple of studies at one point that's pretty amazing, that you're actually better off having no insurance at all than you are being on Medicaid. You're more likely to die as a Medicaid patient than you are as a patient with absolutely no health care. Now, how you get a system like that and somehow convince the majority of Americans that that is a good thing, that we're being humane to the poor by giving them a system that's more likely to kill them than having nothing at all, is a testimony to how well progressives have sold their programs over many, many decades.
Maybe it's designed to inspire them to get up and get a job.
Jimmy, that actually brings up a good point. That actually brings up a good point because, while you were being invaded by aliens, Mark had mentioned something Michael Medved had said, is the simple fact that what happened today was that conservative just desserts for acting like liberals and expecting the Supreme Court to correct their crappy laws for them. At which point John Roberts basically said, "Hey, that's not going to work this time." How do we make that case when we've showed no inclination that we know how to?
You know what? I think John Roberts did, and I don't want to ascribe too much motive to him because I don't know this for sure. But there are a couple things I know about John Roberts. Number one, he's a very, very smart man. Number two, he is an experienced trial lawyer. He's not an academic. He's a trial lawyer. He is used to the fight, the long game, the appeals and the appeals, and he knows what a court case can do politically and what it can do otherwise. And in that sense, then what he's managed to do first is to take the whole Supreme Court is super politicized completely away from the president. And then he basically put a big red sign over the taxing provisions of Obamacare and said, here is the point of attack, everybody. Go get it. And then he walked away. Which,
right.
If he accidentally did it, then he may be the most genius man ever. But I'd like to think that maybe he had some real purpose behind, number one, letting Scalia write a really effective dissent, but number two, taking the majority opinion away from Ginsburg and Kagan and Sotomayor and handling himself in a very moderate, reasonable, plain tone so that you could see where he's going. And he basically marked all the signposts along the way.
If that's actually the case, that's like a black belt in Jedi jujitsu.
My problem is I think he's going to get shouted down by the Ann Coulters and Rush Limbaughs and Glenn Becks of the world and the people that tend to follow them without question. Because I liked his opinion. I actually read it before the show, and I totally get where you're going with this. He was trying to speak in measured tones, and I think measured tones tend to get drowned out by histrionics. To that end, and I'll give you a chance to speak to that as well. Going forward, you know, we have an election in a few short months. We've got now Obamacare and the economy as two major eclipsing political issues. Is this going to be enough to get Romney elected, or do you think at this point it's too, you know, Obama's got it?
First thing, Mark, you're exactly right about tone at this point. Look, the Roberts decision wasn't going to make Ann Coulter happy. Rush, I expect to hear a little bit different from Rush in a couple days, probably Monday, when he's had a chance to actually sit down with this thing and talk to a couple people, I think that you'll hear something a little bit different from him. But Ann Coulter, Glenn Beck, look, that's how they make their money. They make their money throwing bombs. Bomb thrower's got a bomb. That's the way it is.
Right.
You know, that's the way it's going to be. But, I mean, you know, Roberts, it ain't like Ann Coulter's going to, you know, be throwing the mad bombs and Roberts going to get fired. This is not going to happen. You know, Roberts knows he has his job, and he also knows he's in a game that's been fought for a long time, and that we could finally get a reasonable, at least in my opinion, resolution to through the democratic process, which is the big prize. Look, I wrote a post a while ago that I borrowed something I think I found from Heritage, that the number one thing that's been slowing down jobs is Obamacare. There was a chart of job growth, and it was amazing that we had jobs. Obamacare passed, we stopped having jobs.
Now, is this because companies are directing money that they would otherwise put into hiring into trying to cover the cost of increased health care?
And because of the uncertainty that they didn't know exactly how much all this was going to cost.
Okay, so they're hoarding money and not hiring, essentially.
Yeah, in most cases, they were sitting back going, look, I'm not going to bother to hire people. I know I'm going to need this cash for other stuff. I just can't hire people with it. Now, if you put Obamacare and the jobs together, that's a pretty big issue. And if Mitt Romney wants to be a little bit aggressive, which he should probably be like next week, not in a hurry, because I really think what you ought to do now is just kind of be a little quiet and let Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid throw a party like they've been doing. No, sure, let them throw their parties and then record it all and then just write campaign commercials with their party videos.
And then come back next week
with all the videos and go, okay, now let the serious people talk.
And
I just had a vision of Nancy Pelosi riding a mechanical bull yelling yee-haw.
I would not be surprised.
But the funny thing is, I mean, Jimmy was saying that I have, you know, not literally throwing parties as much as celebratory like responses. Nancy Pelosi flat out said she's having a party tonight.
No, I meant that literally.
Literally,
they're going to throw a party.
As I said, I listened to the Randy Rhoads show. It wasn't Randy Rhoads; it was a fill-in, and you had to hear. The fill-in host does some sort of internet radio show, kind of like ours. I don't know why I said it that obnoxiously. But you had to hear her. She was saying, like, when they upheld Obamacare, I was verklempt, and I'm now ashamed to be a Jew. But she goes, I'm verklempt, and I was so happy. I'm like, oh, my God, get a hold of yourself, woman.
Yeah, you know, it's let that go for a couple days. Just record it. Record it, bookmark it, let it go. And then, you know, then Tuesday, start writing your campaign commercials. Don't even release the doggone things. Wait until August to start releasing those commercials. But look, this thing is, you're going to have to, eventually Obamacare was going to have to be fought in Congress. The court was never going to be the savior. Even if the court knocked down Obamacare, there was going to be something else to come up and take its place. And I think what we have now is better. We have a really wounded Obamacare that somebody's going to have to go back. Of course, they can't let those if we have a couple more minutes, I'll tell you this. Here's what I see, because I mentioned this a couple times. You've got this Medicaid expansion, right, that will essentially all the states will have to expand Medicaid to like 133% of the poverty level. Well, the idea was that the state was going to fund some of it, and the federal government was going to fund a lot of it. So the state was going to have to pick up part of the bill. And a lot of the states, in fact, what prompted most of the states to come in there is to say, excuse me, we can't afford this. We can't pay for this. But what happened was the Democrats who were behind Obamacare The reason they did that is so that they could shift the cost down to the states and take it off the Obamacare books. That's a real cost, but it's not a cost that shows up in the Obamacare score because it's a cost that states are going to have to carry.
Let me
if they can opt out, that score goes back to the federal government. Washington's got to pick up the freight.
Well, you know, when they wrote No Child Left Behind, they had all these mandates for the school systems, and they expected the states to fund it, and then the states didn't. And so what you have teachers talking about now is with No Child Left Behind, we have all these mandates that are completely unfunded. And I think what you just set up is that's what's going to end up happening with the Medicaid expansion, is there's going to be a mandate to provide these services and open these enrollments and absolutely no money to cover it on either side.
Yeah, and that is one of the things that the Republicans ought to play up. Is basically what they're going to do is, look, they're going to actually fix the market so that you can't buy insurance and you won't be able to get the insurance that they say is going to be there. So you're not going to be able to get Medicaid.
And then the great white savior of Medicare for everybody.
Yeah, well, but the problem is, if the states don't pay for it, the federal government can't. There is no money. There is no way in the world that they can pass a bill large enough to do Medicaid for everybody. Not with the debt the way it is, not with people howling about taxes right now. Maybe in 20 years if the cycle comes back around, but right now I think that the Democrats built up just enough power to get what they wanted, and I honestly think they blew it with Obamacare. It's why so many hard-fought core progressives are really angry at the president. Because Obamacare was his chance to get single payer, and he blew it.
Yeah, so because basically, I mean, he was more concerned instead of having a health care bill that – and I've actually noticed this, that there seems to be a split in the Democrat Party between Democrats who believe in Democrat policies and Democrat principles and Democrats who believe in Obama is magic and, you know, we have to protect him at all costs. And those people seem more concerned less with a health care bill that they've been fighting for since the 30s with FDR, and more for, hey, it's a bill that's called health care reform that has Obama's name on it. Huzzah, we win.
Well, I think that was the logic of getting him reelected. If he can get something with the name health care passed on it, even if it's a ham sandwich, then people will say, look, we're getting free stuff and vote him in again. And look, I go to the people who voted him in and thought they weren't going to have to pay for their mortgage anymore. It was not an implausible plan.
Well, and the likelihood was that he could go back and kind of fix things in his second term.
Right. You know, if this is the New Deal, he can go back and do the Great Society later on if he gets a second chance.
Yeah.
Because, you know, he's the New Deal and the Great Society all wrapped up in one. So, Jimmy, in we'll say 90 seconds or less. Just switching gears a little bit. Eric Holder found a contempt. Where do we go from here with Fast and Furious?
I personally would like to start picking his perp walk music.
Ooh.
If we could just,
down in the hall,
we could
by
just
the
somehow
wire.
devote our time to picking the perp walk music that plays when he's escorted out of the hall. I'm serious. I want Holder in jail for Fast and Furious.
Do you think they will find a charge that they can put on him in this? That'll actually carry to a criminal sentence?
Maybe, but probably not. I think the civil case is going to be far better. Mostly, I think that they're not going to find the criminal case because they're not going to find – I don't think they're going to get the smoking gun from the papers. That's not going to happen till later. The only way that goes bad is if somebody in justice high up steals those papers and leaks them.
Damn it, where's that one Swedish guy with the internet site when we need him?
Where's the dude who smuggled stuff out of who's the guy that smuggled stuff out in his pants from the archives?
Wasn't he a Clinton operative?
Yeah.
Yeah, get him on the case.
I'm actually just thinking how awesome it would be to hear, like, Snoop Dogg's murder was the case every time Eric Holder's on, like, the news. So, before we let you go, what's next? What's coming up next with the delivery?
Next week, I'm going to have Amelia Hamilton, the stellar author, on to talk about her book and the hate she's gotten from her book. And I would probably spend a minute or two on the show talking about healthcare. Probably.
Jimmy Buys, The Delivery, SundryShack.com, TheDelivery.com, Twitter.com, Jimmy with an IEBJR. I had to have missed something because you've got like eight different things.
EndingSpending.com, and I guest write a few other places too.
Jimmy Buys, the hottest working blogger in show business. Thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks for having me, man.
And we'll be right back. You're listening to Whiskey Rebellion Radio on the mighty FTR.
You let me penetrate you. You let me complicate you. Help me, I broke apart my inside. Help me, I've got no soul to sell. Help me, the only thing that works for me.
This is Andrew Breitbart, and you're listening to FTR Radio.
Well, fighting won't stop it. When people disagree, sometimes they need someone who's not involved to settle things.
Johnny Kadump, he's not rooting for either team.
Good thinking. Instead of fighting when you disagree, look for a better way.
Now we know.
And knowing is half the battle.
G.I. Joe!
Hey, Bob, want to paint your name?
No thanks.
What are you, a sissy? Prove you're not, or we'll tell everybody.
I just don't feel right about it.
Right on.
Liz!
It's hard not to follow the crowd, but sometimes that path is just a dead end.
I knew I was right.
Yeah, I'm with you. Me too.
Remember, listen to yourself.
Because I know what's best for me.
And knowing is half the battle.
G.I. Joe!
Now, that don't kill me can only make me stronger. I need you to hurry up now, cause I can't wait much longer. I know I've got to be right now, cause I can't get much longer. Man, I've been waiting all night now. That song I've been on you. Work it harder, make it better. Do it faster, makes us stronger. More than ever, hour after hour, work is never. Let's get lost tonight. You could be my black cave moth tonight. Play secretary.
Welcome back to Whiskey Rebellion Radio.
You are all weirdos.
Yeah.
And now. You like that, do you?
Oh, I do.
Anyway, for our final segments, you see, Mark's one of those people who likes to read, what do you call them, books? You know, I'm more of a comic book guy, but Mark likes to read books and get his learn on. And as I'm setting up this bit, I'm suddenly realizing I forgot to upload the Mark Radulich Book Club theme song. So,
ladies and gentlemen, Chaos Muppet, Don Brodigan.
So, that unfortunately being said, here with his review of the book Idiot America is Mark Radulich.
Now walk your good night. Whoa, now walk your good night.
Let me preface this by saying, you know, I started blogging late 2004 after Bush was reelected, and I kind of was brought to blogging because I, you know, seeing people wanted to move to Canada when he was reelected, and I saw a lot of vitriol and emotion, and I said, you know, I think there's a better way to interact in dealing with politics than this. And I was blogging, and that was kind of my thing, was to be the middle of the road kind of, you know, let's look at the data guy. And after a few years of doing that, I gave up entirely. I hated talking to people. And, you know, and today I was actually reminded of why. You'll recall in a few shows back, we talked about the zombie, quote unquote, the guy who chewed off the homeless guy's face because he was on bath salts. There was an article released this week about how Rudy Eugene wasn't on bath salts. They got a toxicology report back. It wasn't on bath salts. He had marijuana in his system. Good old marijuana. And I posted that on my Facebook page, and within an hour of it being on my Facebook page, one of my friends writes, "No, it was bath salts." And why am I bringing that up in relevance to Idiot America? Because this is why I stop talking to people. No matter how much data you bring to a discussion, no matter how, you know, factually based your arguments are, no matter how much you might just want to talk policy and not bring emotion to it, I have found people can't do it. You know, it took my wife several conversations and begging to get me to talk about anything but MMA and, like, you know, personal-related stuff with her. She would ask me, like, philosophical questions, political questions, and I would go shmageggy because I don't want to talk about anything anymore with people because they can't be fact-based. They have to be emotion-based. And I thought I was by myself. a couple years back, I went to dinner with some friends, and they're all liberals at the table, sorry. And, you know, one guy was going on and on and on about how he wanted to, about he's afraid that his kids are going to be drafted into an army for wars without end. And they kept going on and on and on about how Republicans are going to draft them and all this other stuff. And I said, you know, the only person in Congress, you know, the body in America that writes the laws, the only person in Congress who's talking about drafting anybody is Charlie Rangel, who's a Democrat congressman from Harlem. And he was summarily laughed out of Congress for even putting that to them. Now, the guy in charge of the Pentagon, has, you know, Don Rumsfeld at the time, not a fan of drafts and has talked repeatedly about how he doesn't want to do them. And then I was told I was being rude for disagreeing. This is, again, why I don't want to talk to people about politics. Welcome to the Whiskey Rebellion. Anywho, so Idiot America is about that, essentially. It is about how political speak in this country has devolved into emotion first, facts never. It's written by Charles Pierce, and it was published, I believe, in 2009. Maybe. I know it was written shortly, it was published shortly after the Bush administration, it was in the wake of the Bush administration ending. So a lot of the examples in Idiot America of how we as a country tend to trust in loudmouths and in what we believe as fact and not in facts as fact, a lot of the examples that he uses are from the Bush era years. And that's one of the criticisms of Idiot America by Charles P. Pierce, is that he didn't balance it with any examples from the liberal side. You know, he spends a lot of what this book is about American cranks, as he calls them, quacks, cranks. And he didn't use any cranks on the liberal side, so it just seems like it's a conservative bashing book. I kind of forgive him for that, because like I said, it was written like right after the Bush administration, and there was a lot of examples to use. He goes into like Terry Schiavo and the Creation Museum, where dinosaurs roam the earth with humans and things like that. But one of the things that, and this is where I'll let John kind of come back in with, you know, where he'll just sit there and go, "Yeah, I got nothing," but I want to hear his opinion.
You know me so well, because it's already headed that way.
The three great premises of Idiot America. This is the central thesis of his book. Any theory is valid if it sells books, soaks up ratings, or otherwise moves units. Two. Anything can be true if someone says it loud enough. Three, fact is that which enough people believe. Fact is that which enough people believe. Truth is determined by how fervently they believe it. And again, this is why John Brodigan was the only man that could bring me out of retirement and back into political talk radio. John?
Wait for it.
No, see, I'm going to press you, man, because I know you've been there, too. And I know you're in the thick of politics and what you do. You didn't you didn't quite give up the ship. You went in the other direction. But I know you've had to bang your head against the wall talking to people who, no matter how many times you present the data to them, they go, you know, well, fuck you and the horse you rode in on. And you're like, well, how is that helpful?
I'll be honest with you, but I would never bother presenting the data just because it's one of those things where, I mean, arguing with people like that, once they realize that you got them, they just start an argument about something else.
Yeah, and you wind up on this roller coaster of idiocy.
Yeah. You know, it's like people... It's like the people who carry on and on and on and on, like, oh, well, there was a study that says that the most misinformed viewers watch Fox News. And when I bring up that, yes, a study taken by liberals for liberals, paid for with liberal money, under the premise that anything liberals think is fact, giving liberals the answer that they're looking for before they take the survey, the response is meh.
You know, just on that, let me speak to that for a moment. Look, I'm a big fan of, like I said, show me the data. I certainly look at a lot of studies. But you have to remember one thing with studies is just because someone produces a study doesn't make it the gospel, you know, or if you're atheist, it doesn't make it the Webster's Dictionary. It's not, you know, it's not written in stone.
Let me ask you this. What if someone takes a study, someone writes about in the Huffington area in a Huffington Post, and then it's posted on Facebook? Is it true then?
Only if Ann Coulter says it is.
Boom.
But no, seriously, I mean, people like take things unquestioningly. And it's funny because, you know, you and I have been, we've been doing this since, God, you realize we've been doing this off and on since 2006.
I actually remember back in 65 when we both used to pile around with Ernie Borgnine.
We're old. No, but seriously, folks, you know, John and I have been in the talk radio business. I'm a
hustle. The hustle.
Yeah. For 6 years, and, you know, we've made it a point to just sort of point out the idiocy on both sides. But, you know, you get people who really abuse this. I mean, I don't think we do. I don't think we really, you know, I don't think you and I take a belief that we have and we'll say it over and over and over again, only talk to people who believe as we do, or, you know, limit our interactions with people who don't believe and just try to embarrass them,
definition. I actually can't talk to people, only talk to people who believe what I believe, because I live in the People's Republic of New York. I would have no friends.
Yeah, really. If you're not interested in talking to Democrats, then you've taken a vow of silence.
No, but honestly, actually, for that reason is why I keep my Facebook page neutral zone. It's
mm-hmm.
just because, you know, it's like the slightest little political post, it just, you know, 800 comments later, just people going back and forth with the case of last wordiitis, to the point where I don't even know what the hell people are arguing about anymore.
Two things on that. One, when the Trayvon Martin thing hit, I didn't really take a side on it because I didn't feel like I had enough information to make a valid opinion. You know, I felt like, you know, I just felt like, you know, I don't know what happened there, and I'm not getting a sense that anyone really knows. No, you know, it's like if there was one story that said the guy shot the kid, you know, and the kid was licking a lollipop. There was another story that said the kid had the gun. You know, it was like you couldn't get a straight story. So I'm like, I'm not going to weigh in on this. And you can talk about the veracity of, you know, the weight of the Stand Your Ground law, whether or not it's good or bad. But I don't know if, you know, how it applied to this case. I don't know if you could even do that because you didn't have the data. And I posted one story on this that said, here's an accounting from George Zimmerman's side with data to back it up. And 20 posts later, people were calling each other racist. And I said, this is why I don't talk to anybody. This is why I don't post this shit on Facebook anymore. But, you know, as I said earlier at the top of the show, I had posted a thing on Obamacare. And I said, look, here's the thing. This is what we're talking about, and this is kind of how I feel about it. If you're going to make a comment, for the love of God, please be tasteful. And literally the first comment on there was, do I have to come and punch you in the face?
I saw that.
Tastefully,
of course.
Yeah, tasteful. You know, another guy was joking around. He was like, you suck. And I'm like, this is why I only post MMA and boxing on my Facebook page. So, yeah. if you're interested in reading, Idiot America, it can be funny. My wife listened to it, and I had it on audiobook. My wife listened to it in the car with me, and, she's fairly conservative as well, and, her thing was, I didn't feel like it was insulting towards conservatives so much as it was insulting towards Americans. It's definitely written with a bit of haughty, I'm greater than you. It just definitely takes a look at this country and says, we've become the idiocracy. And actually, that's kind of what I've compared it to. I said, if the idiocracy was more of an editorial than a movie, then the Idiot America was the editorial expanded into book version.
And on that pleasant note, we're going to end it there. Thank you for joining us this week. Thank you, Jimmy Byes, for throwing his 4 cents in. We'll see you guys next Sunday, 10 o'clock, on the mighty FDR Radio. Take it away, not Blink-182.
I took her out, it was a Friday night. I walk alone to get the feeling right. We started making out, and she took off my pants. But then I turned on the TV. And that's about the time she walked away from me. Nobody likes you when you're 23. And I'm still more amused by TV shows. What the hell is ad? My friends say I should act my age. What's my age again? What's my age again? Then later on the drive home, I called her mom from a payphone. I said I want the cops, and your husband's in jail. The state looks down on sodomy. And that's about the time that bitch hung up on me. Nobody likes you when you're 23. And I'm still more amused by prank phone calls. What the heck is call ID? My friends say I should act my age.